love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy. What's up, Space Cowboy? Are you ready to get our bounty?
This is like the
uncoolest
intro ever. For like one of the coolest shows ever, this is just remarkably uncool.
I can't help it that I don't have the swagger that Spike Spiegel has.
Yeah, seriously. I don't think I know anyone who has that amount of swag.
Right.
Which is pretty telling.
Guys, we're going to be talking about Netflix's space sci-fi opera Cowboy Bebop and the original 1997 anime by the same name. I'm excited. Are you excited?
Without further ado, I am Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality. Rolando, I have a question for you while we begin this off. First of all, Eddie Z joining us today?
No, there's no Eddie Z today. He is working late.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, he's becoming really picky and choosy about which ones he wants to participate in.
No, this one is... Well, he's working late, but no, he had no interest in seeing either of these two, which I'm shocked because I feel like he would have enjoyed the Netflix show.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, but... Yeah, it seemed like a line for him that he just wasn't ready to cross. So
I guess maybe it was the anime because I saw I had put on the anime for him and he was just like just checked out mentally. I could just see it in his eye.
Wow.
The only time I've seen him mentally check out like that is when we went to see this venue that had red carpeting everywhere and I just saw it in his eyes. He just like mentally checked out and just was just not.
That's
interested.
Way more understandable. So. Well, my second question for you is, do you indulge in a lot of Japanese media?
Not really, no.
So films, I'm talking about films and television in particular. And I'm not even going to like ask about anime. I'm before I get to anime, just in general. You don't really?
No.
Okay. So
I don't seek it out. I've been forced to watch Yojimbo and
says. That's such a good movie.
Kurosawa films.
Kurosawa is a great filmmaker. I love Japanese films.
It was.
And I think you were forced to watch a Kurosawa film, but you actually enjoyed it, you know. So I'm a huge fan of Japanese cinema, but I'm more a fan of I am in American cinema and other countries. I'm more a fan of more classical ones. Particularly I really love the decades of the 1930s up until say the 1970s. That's my prime era for any sort of content. So this is kind of right outside of that, but it's so heavily based on genres. And in particular, I can even think of a couple movies that influenced it that they took direct inspiration from that I'm a big fan of. So all of that, even though the year is not in my particular favorite year base, it's something that I definitely am into. Now, in terms of anime, did you watch anime growing up?
Just a Pokemon. And I feel like a lot of anime fanatics, they have a word. I forget what the word is for anime watchers, but...
Animaniacs?
Is it? No.
That would be cute though, right?
a lot of anime watchers will argue that Pokemon isn't even anime, so...
I wonder why. Yeah, what that would be.
Your guess is as good as mine. Maybe because it's so cartoon. I don't know. I used to watch Sailor Moon.
Yeah, okay. So there were, I feel like the 90s really was the era that people started really getting into, at least in the Western part of the world, in America, people still really getting into Japanese animes. Sailor Moon, Pokemon. And since then, shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, and Naruto and just so many other shows have just kind of become really popular in our pop culture and just a lot of people are into Japanese anime. And this is actually one of the shows that is considered one of the gateways for American audiences to anime. It's considered a gateway show. Like, this is the one that they like to watch, so it kind of eases them into the Japanese anime style. And that's...
Oh, so this is like marijuana.
Yes, this is the gateway drug.
Yeah.
For Japanese anime.
So then what would be the anime crack?
Oh, that's a good question. We would need an anime expert, which I am not, because again, this is not my preferred Japanese media. But nevertheless, I actually really like Cowboy Bebop. And I'm just, yeah, in general, I think this is, if you're a person who's never explored anime and you're listening to this episode, but you don't know if you want to continue either listening to this episode or watching Cowboy Bebop, I'm here to tell you, you should watch Cowboy Bebop. It's absolutely fantastic.
The original, the anime.
The original, yes. Oh, yeah, I'm focusing right now on the 1998 Japanese anime show.
And you used to watch this?
Yeah, so I have a friend, a mutual friend of ours is a big anime fan, and years ago, when he was like telling me all these animes that he watched, he told me to watch Cowboy Bebop because he realized, one, it's a good gateway show, but two, it has so much influence from Western media that, you know, person, an American can watch it and get the references and like get with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The show, it's just like, you can't put it in a genre. It's like a genre of its own because it's such a toss salad of different genres, mainly being science fiction, noir, and Western. And I'm a huge fan of two of those. So it's just like my thing.
Wait, what's the one thing that you're not a fan of then?
It's not like I'm not a fan of science fiction, but not
like...
Oh,
it was a noir, but it's like, that sounds wrong.
I don't have a love affair. You know, I have like a friendly relationship with science fiction, but I have love affairs with Westerns and noirs. So
right, with me, it would be... science fiction and noir, I could lose the Western part.
Yeah. You don't have any relationship with the Western part, do you?
Yeah, I mean, longtime listeners of the show will know I don't give a damn about Westerns.
Such a shame because it's the only genre that Americans can say we invented and we... Well, actually, I shouldn't say we do the best, but maybe we do the best. That's debatable.
You know what?
But
it was a miss. We never should have done them.
Cowboy Bebop, if you don't know, 1998, it's a show composed of 26 episodes, and it's about bounty hunters in the year 2071. The main character is a character named Spike, and he's a bounty hunter who travels in between mostly uninhabitable planets of the solar system, and he's collecting bounties, right? It's as simple as that. In this futuristic world... Earth was destroyed, or Earth, like on the track we are now, heading towards 2071, it could be said that by 2071, we might all be living in colonized planets in space, because Earth wasn't inhabitable.
I don't think we'll get to other planets. I think we're just going to be dead.
We're just
going to
die. Well, this show gives us hope that maybe we could survive. So Spike, along with his partner, Jet, you know, they're going from situation to situation. Each episode is pretty much... its own story, right? Actually, the creator of the show, Shinichiro Watanabe, he treated every single episode as a miniature film. I mean, Cowboy Bebop did, after the series, become a movie. So he got his movie.
There was a Cowboy Bebop movie?
There was a Cowboy Bebop movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But yeah, so he actually, you know, he wanted it to be like this amalgamation of all his favorite genres, and he wanted it to be 80% a serious story with a 20% humorous touch. Right, so he kind of wanted it to be more serious and, you know, taking it seriously and like kind of dark and you know, violent and fun, but have that like touch in there. So yeah, so Spike, Jet, their adventures in space, you know, collecting bounties.
Yeah, they get joined by Faye, who, she's like a con artist.
She is, yeah.
Animated in the sluttiest ways possible. Like, anytime she moves, her tits jiggle like jello. It's like, it's so absurd. And she always give her like very low-cut dresses, right?
Yes.
They also get joined by Ed, who is a female, I think. Right? Is that right? Ed the hacker?
Oh.
Her name is Ed, but I'm pretty sure she's female.
Well, this character is very androgynous, so it's like kind of up in the air as to... But I do think she's a girl.
Okay. And then lastly, and this is actually not the order, actually. I went in the reverse order. But yeah. There's Ayn, the dog, the corgi.
Ayn, yeah, who's probably my favorite character. It's a super intelligent corgi dog.
Yes.
Who is just so adorable. So adorable. Animated really well. I feel like his mannerisms and everything just really come through.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So Spike, being our main character, you know, he's tall, he's lean, he's pretty much the coolest guy. Like ever, that
he's always wearing a suit.
Always wearing a suit. Good hair, young, and he's just like no one can get past him. Really, I mean, technically, you know, there's a big thing that did get past him, but still, he's smart aleck. He is always on, like, he's one step ahead. You know, he's just doesn't care about things other than eating most of the time. So this is like your typical anti-hero character, and it reminds me actually a lot of Western characters like The Man with No Name in the Clint Eastwood Dollars trilogy, the Italian Westerns, and like film noir types, you know, who's like, you know, Rolando likes to play Dungeons and Dragons. So I'm going to use a Dungeons and Dragons reference when I say that. I feel like an anti-hero is chaotic neutral, right? They don't care about any sort of alignment, and they actually aren't really there to be nice, you know? They really just care about themselves, and they care about looking out for themselves and getting themselves something like money and stuff. Like, bounty hunters are the perfect chaotic neutral characters because they're just in it for the money and maybe even their own personal satisfaction and glory, but they could give a shit about you or your cause for the most part.
Yeah, that seems about right.
So, and those are the characters that I always find interesting, and if I were to ever play Dungeons and Dragons, I'd probably want that to be my alignment, because, you know,
most people always pick that alignment because it gives you liberty of not being straight up evil, but it allows you to be selfish.
Yeah,
and stuff.
There's That's something like some people. There's something about cool and alluring about being, you know, kind of a jackass, but you're not evil, but you are kind of a son of a bitch, you know. So, so do you enjoy this character? Right, he's kind of like, we see everything through his eyes and through. At the end of the day, it is very much his show and it's focused on him. Do you think he's a successful main character?
Yeah, from what I saw, he was. I liked Spike as like a main character, right? Like, I think he's almost on the verge of being too cool.
Yeah,
right. He's always shirtless, working out, flirting with women. He's very suave. I like it. It's, you know, I don't usually find myself sexually attracted to animated characters, and I would say, okay, maybe, I guess.
Okay.
But I also did like his friendship also with Chet, right? Like, I think they made for a good partnership. It felt like a buddy cop show at times.
Yeah.
Watching this.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Chet, you know, is somewhat the comedic relief, but he's also like the straight man. He's like a weird blend of the comedic relief but also the straight man, you know, like if Jet's Bud Abbott, then he's Spike is Lou Costello, you know what I mean?
Right,
in a weird way, in a weird like reverse way. But yeah, I like their relationship, but you know, to me, the things that work the most about this show have nothing to do with characters. It has everything to do with the stylization. This is a highly stylized anime, down to the colors, to the way that they dress the characters and the outfits that they put them in, and then to the way that they design the lands that they go through. You know, it's set in space, but everything kind of also, when they're on these different planets or in these different worlds, they feel either like a Western or a noir. They have colors that are like inspired by old films and black and white films. And it also kind of feels like a graphic novel. You know, they like, especially the opening credits scene that set the scene, which is just dynamite, right? Like, Netflix absolutely knew that they had to completely redo that. I mean, the show was so stylized that we'll be getting to that in a bit, but Netflix ended up taking so much from it because it's all there within this original show. So the stylization to me is what makes it. It's just so visually stunning to watch.
Right.
And
I would agree. I mean, I'm trying to. I personally gravitated towards like the action sequences because they could be pretty violent, but also they were. Is choreographed the right word? I don't. think so, maybe, because it's animated, but maybe, I don't know what the right word would be. I'm not like, you know, I'm not a student of animation, but
yeah.
The action sequences were just, like, they were just animated so lovely, right? Like, it was almost like a dance that you were watching on screen, and then, like, they would give you, like, these unique angles. So I ended up gravitating towards a lot of those sequences, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, each episode, this is like a very, each episode was very standalone, right? This
yeah.
isn't a serialized drama. There wasn't an arc per se. While we did get, the show has one villain, but like, he's not even like a villain. He's just a villain in Spike's life. He's not even like a villain to the Bebop crew. And that would be Vicious, who is probably like one of the most, he's probably the worst thing of this show. He's so one dimensional, right? Like he has like, there's no substance towards to him whatsoever. He's like almost evil for the sake of being evil.
Yeah.
But what I appreciate about the show though, is like, they don't hold your hand here, like in giving you backstory. Like you get like maybe sometimes flashbacks, but like, they're done almost artistically to a fault, where it's just like you have to like really dissect those to figure out what's happening sometimes, you know? And that's fine. I think that is fine, because sometimes shows get boggled down by trying to give you so much exposition.
This is true. Yeah. You do. It's like you get it as you go. And I absolutely appreciate that from a story point of view. You know, we both study screenwriting. So when you just get like all this exposition or all this backstory at front, it like makes you roll your eyes. It's kind of like the presence of the writer is all too present. And so mm-hmm. when you're actually like watching things unfold and you're getting information here and there, you know, we talked about that in like Dune, where they actually withheld information. They slowly put it throughout the film. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think I'm a fan for that. And I think that's one of the things that this anime does so well. Especially because there's a huge love story, you know, that doesn't even come across until a couple episodes into the series. Which is that Spike used to be in the crime syndicate with Vicious, right? And Spike's name was Fearless. And they actually fell into conflict over a woman. It's a classic story. And
duh, I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah. You know, and pretty much they became enemies after that, after Vicious and Julia, right. You know, started being together. And that is actually established within the first couple of scenes of the first episode visually. But of course, we have no idea what we're watching or what's going on.
Wait, was it established in the first episode?
Yeah. So like, there's like this whole kind of like dream like sequence in black and white with the rose and stuff.
In the first episode?
Mm-hmm. And then he wakes up.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember he was flirting with like
with the pregnant woman in the first episode.
The pregnant lady. Yeah,
yeah, but that was later. That was like that was the first like 3 minutes right after the opening credits. There's like this whole black and white dream sequence, and then he wakes up. So he's like remembering, mm-hmm. you know, what happened to him.
No, I'm like literally about to go onto my laptop right now, turning off the audio to just check it out real quick to see what did I miss.
Okay, do it.
Oh, you're right. It's like right before the opening credits.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. Sorry, it is before the opening credits. Yeah, I got the...
You're right. Yeah, I had forgotten that. So, yeah, there you go. You see?
Yeah. So
the series opens up on like a little bit of his backstory without giving you any idea what's happening.
Absolutely. And that's just like so refreshing. And like this is more of the case nowadays, but back then this wasn't the case, where shows kind of like knew what they were going to do and everything was written. They had a story arc that they wanted to tell. This is one of those shows. I feel like in the 90s kind of episodes were just like they just kind of made it up as they went along. It's like, all right, well, what do we want to do this season? And a lot of times you'll watch shows just kind of lose themselves and add all these new characters or new storylines, and it's like, what is the show even fucking about anymore? So it's always really refreshing when a TV show didn't do that and has a set arc that they want to tell, and they are establishing it from like the get-go, right? This is before the credits happen. So they're like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to tell this over a course of a couple episodes. It's just really mm-hmm. nice storytelling. So yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I liked about the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I take it you're a fan of Cowboy Bebop. That's
It's my kind of genres. I mean, the Westerns, too. Like, all of those, you know, you said you like the violence, but those confrontations are straight out of Westerns, man. Just, like, them looking at each other and then drawing. And you know how many times I hear whistling in Cowboy Bebop? I'm like, oh, this is straight out of a fucking Italian Western.
I mean, you know, it's in there, cowboy.
It is in there, you know? Cowboy, yeah. And Bebop, which is actually, do you know what Bebop is a reference to?
Like, I don't know, Bebop and Rocksteady.
What's Bebop and Rocksteady?
Ah, you don't know. They're bad guys from Ninja Turtles.
Oh. No, it's actually a reference to the genre of jazz, Bebop, like Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker. You know, they played Bebop.
Oh, and that's why a lot of music here is jazz.
It's jazz, yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
interesting. There you go.
So yeah, also the music. Yoko Kahana's music, or Yoko Kanna's music of this show is just absolutely stellar. A lot of it is jazz, but a lot of then she goes into cinematic and Western and noir type music, and she just blows it out of the park. I think one of the best shows, not only of the visual aspects, is the musical aspect. I love the soundtrack so much.
Yeah, and can you believe it was only just one season?
Yeah, one season, 26 episodes. The fucking intro was like 5 minutes long. And like, so you're getting like 20 minute perfectly.
Stop. It's like a minute and a half.
it's long, but. Most.
It's a good sequence, though.
It's a fantastic sequence. Actually, like, very inspired by 60s culture, I think. And like, especially like the way the Italian Westerns opened up.
My godfather had actually showed me it when I told him we were going to cover this show. Because I've never seen Cowboy Bebop until we had to cover this, despite the fact that like a lot of my friends kept recommending it. It was like, oh, Cowboy Bebop is one of the best animes. And I'm just like, I don't care, you know, but pleasantly surprised when I was watching it. But the intro, I remember when he was showing it to me, my first reaction was just like, oh my God, this looks like the Archer intro. And he's like, well, Archer ripped it off. I was just like, okay, well, that's a little harsh. What year did this show come out? 93. I was like, okay, probably Archer maybe have ripped it off.
Yeah, well, Archer.
But no, it's obviously inspired from like those early, like those 60s. Yeah, it's all derivative.
They're all inspired by the same shit, you know, James Bond too. And those kind of like really huge musical visual intros that were happening that were really popular at one point, and then they kind of died off. And I'm like,
I know,
so
they should really
come
back.
Yeah, they should. And now
they really should.
Have you realized that like theme songs for TV shows are also kind of like passe because everything's streaming and nobody, when they're, you know, sitting home binging shows, wants to watch the theme song over and over again. So they'll just like show the name of the show and that's it. And it's like kind of annoying because where did the art of the theme song go?
What do you think about like the show's inherent sexism here in this show?
The show's inherent sexism?
Yeah, like I feel like they were just like always like it was all about Faye's bouncing boobs. You know what I mean? I think it was just like it was absolutely objectifying this poor. I don't even think she got. Well, I didn't see the whole series, but like every time I saw her, like she was either just like literally getting kidnapped, her boobies were just bouncing. or she was like, what's it called? She was just like, I felt like she was underdeveloped, as was kind of Ed. I think I may have gotten more development than those two characters.
Okay.
I don't know. Is that just from the episodes that I saw? Like, did they get more screen time later on?
I guess so. You know, I haven't watched every episode, so I can't speak to that, but. You know, it's interesting because I guess I'm just so used to women being drawn a certain way that it wasn't even anything that like completely stood out for me. But at the same time, I will say you even said yourself that you were sexually attracted in some ways to our main character, Spike.
Yeah, but not physically. It was more like the swagger.
I feel like these characters are drawn so almost like, yeah, like cinematically, you know, like you really get a sense of what they would look like if they were actual human beings, that I think she's just a hot ass chick and they drew her that way. It's like Jessica Rabbit. It's not my fault. I'm drawn that way.
I mean, yeah, it's not your fault, but
I mean, granted,
it is the people who drew you.
Her male counterpoints counterparts wear more clothes and don't expose their hot bods as much as she does. I guess I didn't really think about it that much, but now that you pointed out it, I guess I'm just used to it.
I guess. Wow, Nicole.
Which is crazy, right?
You win. No, I mean, honestly, I can't. This show is a bop. I enjoy it. And it's definitely going to be one of those shows where, like, I was skipping around to, like, kind of get a feel for the show, right? I wasn't watching. I looked up a list of, like, the best episodes and, like, that clown episode, Pierrot Le Fou,
yeah.
Yeah, that episode was, it's, like, in the top three according to this list that I had seen. And I was like, that was a good episode, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Again, action sequences galore. And it's so rare for, I think, pop culture to do clowns without, like, killer clowns without seeming like the Joker. And they were able to do so effectively without, like, kind of, you know, it was able to stand on its own. I think it's a problem. I think that's why a lot of media tends to, like, avoid clowns.
You know, a lot of these episodes actually are references to American properties. Like, say, Pierrot Le Fou is actually a French film by Jean-Luc Godard, but Wild Horses, which is a Rolling Stones song, is one of the episode titles.
Those are both European properties. I just want to point that out.
Oh, yeah, Rolling Stones, very good. My Funny Valentine, which is an American jazz song. Bohemian Rhapsody, which is an English song, you're right. Sympathy for the Devil. Wow, there's a lot of, and Honky Tonk Woman, there's a lot of Rolling Stones references, actually. So that is all right, British.
So
yeah.
This is
Western. Yeah, more Western.
Western, not American. Because we Americans, as you have said, the only thing we've invented is the Western.
This is, like, true, yes.
Who likes that?
Plenty of people like it, Rolando. Plenty of people. Okay, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, I think I'm ready to talk about Netflix's remake of Cowboy Bebop.
Can you tell us anything about the history of the development of Cowboy Bebop?
The show was announced in 2017, so that's almost, what, 4 years ago?
Yep.
At this point?
Mm-hmm.
Almost five. And it was announced that Netflix was going to be the one that was going to be streaming it. And I believe that, yeah, the following year, casting was announced, and that would be John Cho, Mustafa Shakir, and Daniela Pineda. We're going to be the lead roles, Spike, Jet, and Faye.
Yep.
And I think initially, a lot of fans, when they heard John Cho, was a lot of head scratching, if I remember, on the Twitter sphere, because, you know, no shade to John Cho, but, you know, after watching this show, it's just like, when I think of swagger, I don't think of John Cho. So that's just sorry. And it's unfortunately a lot of due to a lot of the roles that he has been given in the past. But as he has complained a lot, like, there's a lot of racism in the casting that he has had to deal with throughout his career, you know. So
yeah.
I get it. So it's not his fault that he doesn't have that swag, that we don't associate swagger with him. But I was part of that person.
Yeah,
I you should give him a chance, when I was watching this, I was part of that because I had no opinion on the casting, obviously, when these came out. But watching this, I was just like, and watching the original, I could say, it's just like, okay, but I now see what people were talking about, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay.
Let's see. And yeah, no, I mean, this was just Netflix just, I feel like it was a surprise announcement almost. Like, I don't think anyone was asking for a live action Cowboy Bebop. And
yeah,
kind of reason being, it's just like the show itself is so good. It's just like, sometimes you wonder, it's like, do we need it? It's one season. Like,
yeah,
why
absolutely.
Do we need a remake? And mm-hmm. Netflix was just like, I don't care. We're giving it to you. And here we are.
Yeah, actually, here we are. I think they cast it in 2019 and they were filming somewhat throughout the pandemic. And that's why it got a little delayed. But many, many years later, at least if you have been anticipating it, here it is. I just want to say that the Netflix team actually researched a few films that they wanted to, you know, take as a stylization and and kind of like, you know, turned to in terms of inspiration. And the films that they watched were The Big Sleep from 1946, which is a film noir with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. The Western film, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh,
the new Hollywood crime film, Bonnie and Clyde. Stanley Kubrick's Bonnie and Clyde.
Is that...
With is Warren that Beatty. Bonnie,
Faye Dunaway?
Yeah, Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty. Wow, good for you knowing Faye Dunaway. I'm so, that's awesome. Just to say a couple more films that they watched. They watched Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. They watched Dirty Harry, another Clint Eastwood movie. You know, so Clint Eastwood is big influence. And they watched Lethal Weapon, because, of course, you're going to watch the quintessential buddy cop movie.
It's a buddy comedy.
And The Crow. And I feel like if you were to take all of these components together, which if you've never seen, don't do that. Don't be like, why The Crow? Then you don't know why. The Crow is actually a pretty good movie. Yes, it is. So when you add The Big Sleep, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Bonnie and Clyde, 2001 Space Odyssey, Dirty Harry, Lethal Weapon, and The Crow, you get Cowboy Bebop, at least the Netflix version.
Like a theory, I guess.
Yeah, well. So they took so much from the anime. It's practically the same exact show. The stylization of the anime is all over this Netflix show. They remade, almost shot for shot, this fantastic opening credit sequence that we keep talking about. They added some live action elements that, of course, you can't do in an anime. But other than that, they took it from like the anime influence the shit out of that. The music, you know, like every episode ends with the text, "See you later, kid, space cowboy." The show ends that way.
Yeah.
Every time the name of the episode comes up, the text and the stylization of how they did that, session number one, session number two, to session number three, it's in here. They got the same musician, thank God. Yoko Kanno is back to give some more of her dynamite music and her soundtrack. And it's so crazy going from the anime, and that's just so well done, to going to this, to live action show that is trying so hard to almost be an anime that it's kind of jarring in some ways. But for me, overall, was successful. Although it was kind of weird that it wanted so badly to be an anime. There are a couple things I don't think are successful, but I would like to actually hear from you before I defend it, because I don't think you liked it.
I was indifferent of the show. It's so interesting, right? Where there were parts of the show where I was just like, okay, I can get into this. And then immediately I was just like, I'm out. I'm out. And I think part of that was kind of, this felt like I was watching like a fan film of the anime, like
and
a student
that's a bad
film.
Thing.
Sometimes, yeah. Like haven't you ever been to school? Like in college, you didn't have like the kids who tried to make like a fan movie and put them all on YouTube and stuff. I've seen those, and they're usually terrible. I think, for me, the problem here is, and luckily, as I usually do, I was seeing these in reverse, right? I was watching the live action one first before I started watching the original one.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
Oh, is it? Because even when I was watching it, I was just like, why is this so corny? Like, that was my reaction. It's just like, this is a little corny. Like, these costumes are a little bit cheap. Well, and I think it was trying to be all style, but it had such like no substance. So I saw like maybe two, so I saw two episodes, right, of the new one, and I was just like, let me see what the hell they're trying to do here. And I saw the original. I'm like, okay, I see what they're trying to do, but it's just like this is a little bit of a miss. And then sometimes I was just like, I mean, there were some times where the performances were so campy that I was just like, okay, I appreciate that. Specifically, the guy who's playing Vicious, because Vicious is like the most one-dimensional character.
Oh my God, yeah.
He decided just like, I'm going to go a full maniac on it. I'm just like, okay, go do you, King, because like they're not giving you much. I started the new one. I saw two episodes. I quickly switched over to the original one and kind of watched a lot more before I went back to continue the Netflix one. And I was just like, ugh, this is a little bit of this. It's so garish. It's so garish.
Okay. So it's interesting because it reminded me a lot of two films in particular, Sin City and Dick Tracy. Two films that are based off of graphic novels, and they realize how heavily stylized that those original drawings were, that they couldn't make the films without kind of like putting stylization at the forefront. And then from there, telling their story. And if you don't want over the top stylization, then you are definitely going to be disappointed by Cowboy Bebop, because that's like kind of one, fan service, but two, it's like they kind of have to. They have to give in to the stylization of it all because everybody's going to be looking for it. And it's like, hey, the costumes that work on a cartoon character are not always going to work for a human being. And actually the way that they make John Cho look as Spike is a little weird, especially because Spike is 27 and John Cho is 49. So he also looks
like... John Cho is 49?
He's 49.
I would have said 30-something. Good for him.
Yeah, no, he looks fantastic for his age, but he also doesn't look youthful in that way that Spike does in the original show.
Right. So I could forgive that, to be honest, because like just saw Spike.
That actually didn't bother
me. It's hard
me.
To make someone look somewhat old on Anna, so I didn't know.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Did they ever say his age like verbatim like that? I didn't know how old he was.
No, I looked up how old he was.
Okay, I was gonna say it's like I don't remember it coming up. So
yeah, so like that's the thing. Like at first, like his outfit was one thing that at first I was like, I have to get used to this. This is a little weird, but it's also like, you know, well, what did I expect? He's actually supposed to not look realistic, right? It's supposed to be like a hyper reality. It's supposed to be an unreality almost.
Yeah.
So you know, kind of once you get over that, and if you're open to getting over that, like I said, if you don't really like that, then you might not like the show. But if you kind of turn yourself over to the fact that it's also going to be like flipping genres, like flipping a fucking switch, and you're just going to be in and out of all of these different things, you actually end up, I think, having a lot of fun with it.
Mm.
Me personally, because the one thing that they did so well about the anime show and the way that it was beautifully drawn, the way that they set up the world, they translated visually really great. You know, like the ship, right? The ship is kind of like a shithole. It's not a very nice ship. They're out in space and they're doing cool things, but the ship that they have is really shitty. It's a shitty ship. And them living in that kind of like wasteland, you know, is the fact that they inhabit this world that's like everyone's, you know, like it's crazy stuff that's happening all over. People have outlandish outfits and it is kind of cartoonish, but it's also like not very beautiful. You know, it is kind of like a Western dystopian world. That I also thought went really, really well. Everything kind of popped. And that's also what people are kind of looking for. And I think that they really succeeded in that way. A couple ways that... Yeah.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
When you say, like, the show is trying to be hyper-stylized...
Yes.
What do you mean in the instance of this show? Because I think... Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I think that it's trying to bring Cowboy Bebop to life, right? So it's trying to look like an anime, but with real people. Like, almost as if that anime was real, what would it look like? It would look like this, if that makes any sense. And also taking from the influences that the anime took, these Western films, these crime and noir films, and adding those elements into it, you get this weird futuristic... everyone looks cartoonish, you know. It's a weird amalgamation of all these components together, and that's why I think it's highly stylized, is because it's taking so directly from the anime, but then going even a step further and going to the things that inspired the anime and adding that in there, and everything just kind of feels so fake and so like unreal that it's part of the way that it's styled.
So. I think, yes, I agree with you. That, I think for me, ultimately, where this comes down to is the stylization I can forgive. Like, I can forgive a cheap-looking suit, right? I can forgive a bad wig on John Cho. I can forgive What's it called? I Can Forgive. Like, I think the world, the set design was actually, I think, done creatively, right? It was like kind of a cyberpunkish like future that they were giving us, with a little bit of Western like dirtiness, right? That's all fine. I think for me, ultimately, where this stylization just ends is just like, it was kind of, the dialogue was a little cringy at times.
So for you, it boils down to, you didn't really enjoy the script.
It was the performances. And it was like the performances, a little bit of the dialogue here, where it was like so... Okay. Immediately, the first thing that comes to mind when I was watching the first one, he had this interaction with the pregnant chick, right? And they're flirty. And then I go on and watch like the original one. And when he was flirty, there's like a difference in the way they delivered those scenes. The difference in Spike. Spike in the original one had such swagger. Like mind you, this is just voice performance, right? On these two characters that we're seeing. But the sexual chemistry between them was so palpable. Here, not one wiggle anywhere in my nether regions, right? Like, I sense absolutely no sexual tension between these two characters. And they even tried to go out of their way to point out to me, it's just like, oh, she reminds me of someone. Julia. Okay, yeah, I fucking get it. Thank you for that flashback I didn't need. But like, again, it's just like the performance was so kind of flat that I was just like, ugh. And this is, I don't know. I'm just saying, it's just like, and this is, and a lot of this actually problem comes from John Cho's character. Jet's character is also takes like a little bit of a backseat a lot here, more so than like the original Jet in the original show. And they give a lot more weight to Faye, who I think is a much better character here. But
yeah, she is.
It's just like, but she's trying to pull. I don't know. She's doing a lot of lifting, and like her character isn't that strong enough to do. They're trying to give her too much of a backstory, and I was just like, all right, but I don't care that much, girl.
Yeah. So it was interesting because remember when I said that Shinichiro Watanabe said that his show was 80% serious, 20% comedy. I do personally feel like that changed for the Netflix show, and I think it's 50% comedy and 50% serious. And I think that's all the difference in things like delivery and whatnot. His Spike is so different from the cartoon Spike. Now, it's interesting because part of me wants to defend him because, well, one, he's an actor. So he's playing, and he's a real life. You know, he's using his body, not only his voice. So he's interpreting the character in his own way. But it could also be, I mean, the material is pretty much the same. You know, so I think a lot of it might be his acting choices.
Yeah.
But I also feel like needs to make him more human because it's a live action story. The things that worked for the anime, the live action people for Netflix thought to themselves, is this going to work in terms of us telling it with human beings? And they decided no. And whether or not I agree with them is one other thing. But they decided, no, we have to actually have a whole overarching story for this entire 10 episode thing. And we have to establish, you know, backstory more intimately. And we have to make Spike more likable, quote, likable. Unless you almost said he almost had too much Spike. He was almost too cool, right? This Netflix version humanized him. You know, he's maybe more of a jokester, but he's also not the coolest guy ever. And like the original Spike was, he seems like a real person.
Did he?
I mean... Yeah, he kind of did. I mean, he needs to fucking get a new hairstyle. But other than that, he walks around more with his heart on his shoulders, or whatever, the chip on his back, whatever that saying is. Like, you know, you could tell he's got pain in him. He's suffering a little bit more than the original Spike was. You didn't know a fucking thing about the fact that he was heartbroken over the Julia thing. But you got that immediately in this new one.
You got it because it was told to you, though.
I also think it was his performance, especially in that scene when, like you said, oh, there's no sexual tension here because it's all actually from his pain and him not being able to escape his past that he was playing that scene with. So it's interesting, too, because I actually think that performance-wise, especially in terms of Jet, he kind of made it more cartoonish. Right, the way he delivers his lines and everything, he went the cartoonish way. I think that John Cho went more the more humanist way, where he actually turned Spike into a character with multi-layers and flaws. And I mean, people who like the Spike in the 1998 one will be disappointed, because he does kind of change Spike. Spike is completely different. He's not just this cool guy with nothing else. Like, he's got different components to who he is now. And I actually think that's one of the best things about acting, is how a character can kind of, you know, take what they're given and like make it their own. And he made it his own. So I do want to defend him in that.
I'm okay with him making his own. All right, fine. So maybe, yeah, fine. His performance might be at the fault of the script, but like, it still doesn't matter. Like, it was still, I feel like it was, well, you're forgiving his like flaws. It's just like, but the flaws are still there at the end of the day. In my
opinion.
Wait,
is it
like,
the
right?
script or is it his performance then that you're
both.
Really?
I think it was kind of, I think it's a little bit of, a lot, both actually. Like, I don't think the script, the episodes, we're kind of just like, it's so weird. Like, I hadn't not watching these in the right order, right? Like, watching the new one first and then going back, and then like kind of it fucks with your head a little. But
yeah, it does.
But at the same time though, it's just like, I feel like a good show, I should just be able to still watch it and enjoy it, not be by the end of the second episode and be like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, what is this fucking cracked out dream I'm like watching? Like, it was, I don't know, like, yeah, fine, the surrealism is kind of cool sometimes, but it's also just like, I don't know, maybe for me, you know what, I think maybe it's the costumes felt so costumey. They felt like something I would see at Comic-Con, that I was just,
yeah they feel like cosplayers. Like,
it just really keeps pulling me out of this like a lot. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird because if you are into that, in that world, and you see cosplayers a lot, then a lot of this is going to seem just like cosplayers. And it is, it's like, is it the cosplayer's fault or is it Netflix's fault? Like, I don't know. It's like, or is it just kind of like me putting too much of my own experiences into the story? You know, should I just kind of like surrender myself over it? And it's hard. It's fucking hard. But I don't know. Like, it's so interesting because I will defend overly stylized things because I think that's kind of the point of them, right? Like, you kind of can't have a problem. Like, if you don't like melodrama, then you have no fucking business watching a melodrama. And some of this was kind of melodramatic too, which I love melodrama. If you don't like musicals, you can't complain about things that make a musical musical. You can't complain that they sang out of nowhere because this is a fucking musical. Like, do you not know what world you're living in?
No, agreed.
So this is kind of like those things where you have to turn yourself over to the camp. Everything's kind of amplified to 11. And everything, the hyper-stylization, the fact that it is all these different genres into one, just makes it, it's different. It's kind of needs to, you kind of need to be more okay with it. And if you're not okay with it, then it's going to bother you more, I think. And I think that that's probably why it didn't bother me as much, because I was like, okay, I'm buckled in and I'm ready to go for this ride. And it feels like maybe you weren't, or maybe those components just like didn't really sell you.
I don't know here, right? Because there were, all right, let me talk about some of the things that I liked, right?
Okay.
I think sometimes the action sequences were fun. Sometimes. And then sometimes they were corny. One of the corniest ones that comes to mind was actually the major fight sequence we had between Spike and Vicious in this adaptation at the end of the season, where the original one, there was such anxiety producing in the editing of it. Here was just so, they focused more on the style. And on the style of actually shooting it than actually giving me like good body language here, like body performances.
I thought you were talking about the like things kinda... you liked.
Oh. Oh, well, no. Hang on. All right, you're right. I went into complaining about like the Vicious and Spike fight. But in terms of the action sequence that I did like, for example, I think the first action sequence where we got to see a little bit of John Cho doing karate, I think his movement was a little stilted. I think it worked in that setting, right? And then they also do the payoff of like kind of showing us we're in space, guys. Like this is going to be wacky. I'm just like, oh, okay, all right. I'm here for this a little, but I don't know. Maybe. I'm trying to think of what else did I like, and the performances from the girl who played Faye. I think
she's one of the best parts. Yeah,
she is easily one. I think. See, here is a character that they were able to kind of nod to the original one while still making her feel new and fresh and like not like an emulation of not a simulacrum of the original one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that Fancy one goes out to my grad school teachers out there who would be so proud of me using that word.
That reference goes to you. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. And I don't know. I think also sometimes the editing here was just a little too hectic and stuff. And it was just like,
yeah, that's it was just how things are edited these days. For sure.
Wild. And also, I mean, they introduced Vicious like way so early. So when I'm watching the original one, I'm just like, where the fuck is Vicious? Like, I thought Vicious would be a big character. Yeah. And I'm doing my research. I'm just like, the Vicious shows up in 5 of these episodes and they build him out to be the main character, like the main antagonist of this series.
Yeah.
And that character, and again, performance here is just like over the top, but he went with it. I don't know. Maybe the whole thing just felt unhinged. Like, it had no idea what it wanted to be.
That's true. Yeah, it was very much this big remix that just had too many different beats in it. It's interesting because in Vicious's case in particular, you know, the inspiration for that character was a fucking snake. And it's easy to draw that. But then it's like, okay, the character you're playing was drawn to be like a snake and that's what you have to work with. It's like, how the fuck do I act that? And he had a challenge and, you know, he did what he did with it. But it's, you know, they're kind of like almost... It makes their jobs that much harder because they have all these things that they have to live up to. And some of them succeeded and some of them didn't. It's not like a fucking perfect show for sure. But it's interesting too because it's like you kind of have to do half. You have to give the people what they want and you have to give them what they're expecting and then make it your own and make it more of like realistic in your own way, even though this world is hyper unreal and ridiculous. And that's, I think the show was kind of trying to balance that act, right? Where it was like, we need to give people what they want. We need to make it as stylized as the original, but we also have to add different elements to it because they also made the choice to not make each episode, you know, its own story. They wanted to weave all of the different stories throughout the show and tell them through each episode. So even though the first episode is the same with the guy with the red eye injections and his, you know, story, but they introduce Faye, they introduce Vicious. Mm-hmm. And these stories keep getting told throughout the episodes. And it's interesting because earlier too, it's like, oh, the one story that was kind of told early in the 1998 episode is the Julia love triangle that we get kind of here and there at throughout a couple episodes over the show gets played out. But it's played in every single episode here, right? We just kind of keep going back and forth to it. And in this way... I mean, yeah, this works better when it's live action. You kind of have to. Like, you want people to get more emotionally invested in these characters. But it was also, like, a bit... It was almost overload. It was almost, like, information overload, character overload. You know, like... And what story is going on in this episode? Like, they're too busy planting things that are going to come up later that... This is one of my major flaws of the show that, yeah, they kind of overload every episode with all these different stories and all these B stories that it's kind of like, can you just tell one fucking story straight, please? So I liked, I don't know. For me, it was more so like them trying to, all the different stories that they were trying to tell per episode, I just felt like was a bit much.
You know what else was a bit of a letdown here? Fucking no Ed.
No Ed. Maybe there'll be Ed in the next season. Yeah, if there's going to be a season 2.
Ed shows up at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, still. Not enough.
And it's just like, hardly. Like, it's just like, what? And then, did you get far? Can I spoil things for you?
You can. I watched half of the show, so.
Okay. Did you finish it? Here's how the, yeah.
Oh, so you didn't like it, but you finished it.
I'm a dedicated podcaster.
Look at that. Wow.
Part of it might have been a little bit of a hate watch, to be one of the episodes is, guess what, a flashback episode after. Oh, I know why. I was trying to get to the clown episode.
Okay.
And again, well, kind of a little bit of a like, oh, okay, this is kind of corny. And then of course it follows up with a flashback episode that gives us, is spoon feeding us like the Julia Vicious and a Spike melodrama, right? And I was just like, ugh, I didn't need this. What a wasteful
was it episode. Was it really spoon feeding it?
Yeah, basically it was telling us literally what the beef is between the three of them, like what, how did things get to this point?
But didn't the original show also do that? Like, you need to be told really. At some point
they tell you, from what I understand, they tell you a lot through dialogue. I don't know if there was if there was an episode that actually gives you to you. I didn't see it.
Okay.
Like I said, Vicious only shows up in 5 episodes, so you, and they only had 20 minutes in each episode, so sparingly. I don't even know if Julia ever shows up in the original one, right? But Julia does here. Julia plays a pivotal role, and Julia decides to be the queen of the syndicate. And
yeah. And Julia's, you know, so how fucking hot. I'm sorry, she's just so hot. I just have to say that.
Do we know her from somewhere? She looks familiar.
I'll look her up.
Can't carry it. No, I know that much though. They have her singing like as like a jazz singer, and I'm like, ew, she's not good. Like, they should have lip synced that. I'm so sorry. I'm really coming off so harsh on the show because sometimes the flaws were so like there in my face. But anyway,
her name was Elena Satin, and she's been on Smallville playing Mara and Lorelai on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yeah. Maybe Eddie knows her. But yeah. she ends up shooting Jet at the end of the episode and stuff. So that's what happens. Give me one. So she shoots Jet at the end. Not Jet. I'm sorry. Spike.
Oh.
At the tower.
Oh.
Yeah. And she becomes the leader of the Red Dragon Syndicate or whatever.
Oh. They went there. Mm. Okay.
That was like the only original thing I saw on the show. I was just like, okay. Hey, cool. And then Ed shows up at the end.
Interesting. So it definitely sets up for season 2.
It definitely sets up for season 2, yes. Okay. Because Vicious is still alive.
I just wanted to read something that Shinichiro Watanabe said, who is the creator of the show. And I really hope I'm saying his name right. Apologies if I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But he said in November 2019, I read the initial concept and provided my opinions, but I'm not sure if they will be reflected in the final product. I have no choice but to pray and hope that it will turn out good. Also, for Cowboy Bebop, I don't have any right to stop it. Those rights are in the hands of Sunrise, so if you have a complaint, please send it to them. And I thought it was interesting that he said, I have no right to stop it, right? And you said, nobody asked for a Cowboy Bebop remake reboot, right?
Right.
So it just makes me think, too, like, are we in this world, too, where it's like, if simply somebody wants to see shit, then, you know, these companies are going to put $10 million behind it and just make it happen, even if nobody asks for it? Is that like the world? Yeah. That's what we kind of feel like we're at now. It's not like these things that have been, it's not like Ghostbusters, which we did last week, which has been talked about for 30 years. This is more so like,
there was demand for it.
There was demand for it. It kind of feels like people were happy with what Cowboy Bebop was. And if they wanted more Cowboy Bebop, they wanted it in the style of what they already had. And I think more people agree with you. I think that there are going to be, I mean, first of all, people love to hate, right? And it talks about mediums, the difference of the medium of an anime versus the difference of a medium of a live action television show. You keep saying that the live action show was corny, but it takes so much from the original show that is it simply when you translate it from one medium to another, it just doesn't work. Like a lot of Broadway musical adaptation films this year, Dear Evan Hansen was released and it did not do well because it did not adapt it properly from one medium to the next, right? And it's a big thing. You have to adapt it. Do you think that maybe adapting it was one of the issues that, or it didn't just translate? Like, hey, this works well as a cartoon, but when you start doing things with people, It's not the same. Is that one, maybe one of the flaws that, that you feel happened here?
I mean, in retrospect, after watching it, for sure, that's one of the things, right? Trying to be a literal adaptation is kind of where the flaw here is. It's just like, animation allows you to do things that you just cannot do in live action. So I don't, I'm pretty sure maybe we have talked about this, right? But like, why even bother sometimes like adapting, like remaking an animated property into a live action one? Because it's just like, it's just why sometimes, right? The Lion King comes to mind, although I guess we made the argument that it's just like, it was animation to digital animation. But still,
yeah,
it's one of those instances where it's just like, okay, this is like a literal shot for shot remake that I just don't need. And that's kind of what this felt like.
Yeah.
I was like, trying to think. I was trying to rack my head. It's just like, we've done this for so long. Like, what's a good example of one that I think has been successful? And like, the only one that came to mind was The Jungle Book. And The Jungle Book itself wasn't like a shot for shot remake, right? Like, it was just like, it was kind of, they went on their own. They decided to just expand on scenes to like kind of give us Mowgli stories, but it wasn't a shot for shot remake of the original Jungle Book, right?
Mm.
And I think maybe that's why that one worked. But yeah, like, I think kind of trying to turn this into a hyper stylized remake of the original one is kind of where it loses its luster. It's just like, okay, but like, why? We can't, I guess. For me, sometimes it felt so cheap what I'm watching.
Wow.
That like, yeah, I hate to say it, but like, it just felt so fucking cheap that I'm just like, why even bother? Like, Netflix couldn't use this money on something more productive. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So like, for cut you, your losses and just invest all this on the Avatar series that you guys are trying to make, because God only knows, I'm petrified right now. Petrified.
Petrified. So for you, this was not needed.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah,
not needed at all. Like, this is just what a waste. And I'm trying to think of tonally for here. Like, tonally, the show that kept coming to mind was The Umbrella Academy.
Okay,
now that one is adaptation from comic book to live action, right? It doesn't have. It doesn't have an anime that is covering off of. However, from a tonal point of view, that Umbrella Academy was able to juggle kind of that wackiness, almost surrealist, with that live action element very well. This show was not able to do that, right? This one kind of was just like, this show was struggling with the juggling act here, and it shows.
Yeah.
And I think in like, I think that's, so specifically in that final episode, seeing like the gunning down of some of these characters, it just felt so like kind of just like bit cheap,
you know,
that's really the word that comes out to
it. The one thing I will say is that the original anime feels very effortlessly cool, and this one feels, yeah, like cool but with an effort. That makes sense.
No, it feels like they're trying to be so cool, but like,
they're putting effort like, in being, you know, cool. Yeah.
They're like the wackest students in class, you know? They're just like, ew, those sweaty tryhards over there, you know?
Well, it's so interesting because even though I enjoyed this and I will defend it, was this, if in answer to the question, was this needed? No, absolutely not. This was not needed. And I'm not going to say it was needed or defend my overall enjoyment of it by saying it was needed. I actually kind of, you know, wish things like this would kind of fucking stop, but at the same time, we wouldn't have a podcast, so I guess they shouldn't. But if you're not going to bring anything new to it, then why are you going to fucking do it? Like, why are you going to, you know, waste all this money? And then you just, Netflix does it because they can, and that's pretty much it.
Well, they need to tone it down because, you know, I don't know, Disney's coming at them with that Marvel money.
This is true. This is true. They really need to compete. But I mean, I enjoyed this way more than Gossip Girl and other shows we covered this year. So.
Oh, really? I mean, I didn't finish Gossip Girl, but I would have continued if
so
these were
so
my options.
So interesting.
Like,
you finished Cowboy Bebop and there were other shows you enjoyed
more. But I didn't enjoy it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't say that by the end of this, I was like, I was watching. So the reason I was kind of like speed watching through Cowboy Bebop was because I wanted to, that clown episode in the original one was so good. And I wanted to see, it's like, how do they handle it? And I kept wanting to see the fight between Vicious and Spike, right? Because like the first fight is pretty epic and it's kind of wonderful.
Yeah.
And here it's just like kind of just like a 1 minute jerk off.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. Mostly for the show, whenever I finished a show for this podcast, it's because I enjoyed it. Like Watchmen. I finished that because Watchmen was that fucking good. Other than that, if I don't have to watch every episode, I'm going to stop watching. And that's usually what I do. And I stopped watching after 5 for this one. So.
Yeah, so there you go.
There you go.
How often do you get a Watchmen? The last one I think that we got close to Watchmen was Babysitter's Club.
And this is, oh, that was a great show. Even though I don't even think I finished that, but for different reasons.
Oh,
but man, I watched vast majority of those. Yeah.
The damn out of that, you know? That show's so good.
But I would say watch the original 1998 anime. For sure.
Oh yeah, no, the original one is so good. Like it is when people say it's just like, oh, you finally saw Cowboy Bebop, is it everything we said? It's just like, yeah, I understand the appeal.
Absolutely. So, but what did you guys think? Did you watch the new Netflix Cowboy Bebop? Are you a fan of the original? Have you not even seen the original? Share your thoughts with us. The ways that you can share your thoughts with us are by reaching out to us on social media. Facebook.com/RemakesReboots Revivals. Instagram @RemakesReboots Revivals. Twitter @RemakesPodcast. We are also on YouTube. And you can send us an email by emailing us at RemakesRebootsRevivals@gmail.com. And lastly, we have a voicemail service that you could call in and share your thoughts with. And Rolando is going to tell you that number right now.
That number is 862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please find us on Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. It really does help us. All right, guys. Until then,
stay an original.